Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Hour number three is now underway. Will Hampson coming up in about 30 minutes, so please stay tuned for that. Text line 251-343-0106. Trump right now with the Iraqi prime minister at the White House. They're doing their, the East Room, where they sit down and they get a bunch of questions from our Fourth Estate, are always so insightful. Other than that news, we talked about it. We've been very hyper-focused on the Ivy administration. We do that from time to time. And guys, like I said, what she's doing now, it's like, oh, she's not bothering anybody. She's laying low. But there's a lot of decisions being made that they're going to make. They're going to do things in a way that's going to make it very hard to undo. And I think it's just the West Alabama corridor is one such example where you have this road project and they're going to get all, they're going to come close to getting it finished. At least half of it. They got the Linden bypass done. Looks like they'll probably get the route from Highway 80 north on 69 widened. And then you'll have this, that weird Michigan U-turn. I don't know if you've ever been that way. You cross this four-lane highway, Highway 80. It's there used to be just really two main routes through Alabama. It was 31, the north-south route, and 80, which ran east-west from Phoenix City all the way to York and into Mississippi. And over the years, they four-laned most of it. I think there's a two-lane stretch through Uniontown, and then the rest of it is all kind of four-lane. And you don't have, like, a stop light or anything. You pull out onto 80. Some of you have been this way. If you go to Tuscaloosa this way, you don't just cross the road. You have to get on the highway. You have to go a little while, and then they have this U-turn, kind of like what they got down at the beach. And you do the big U-turn, and then you get back on the 69, and you head toward Greensboro. They're building a big overpass. That's looks like they got the property ready to go, but not they haven't really started on that. And then there's other aspects to it. Getting from Moundville, where you hit the Tuscaloosa County line, it's four lane on into Tuscaloosa. But from the Tuscaloosa County line down south, now to Linden is where they're doing most of the work. See how fast they get it done. But at a certain point, it's sort of like, well, we might as well just go ahead and finish the damn thing. The right-of-way has been obtained, and the road's all been, everything's been cleared. And you have the construction in place. So they did it in such a way to make it very difficult and cost prohibitive not to finish it. But that's kind of emblematic, as I say, of what these decisions that have been made right now are going to impact you long after she's left office with no accountability. Doing more in her lame duck state that you didn't vote for. But that's been sort of the narrative this morning. And it's all brought up. Tommy Tuberville, very vocal yesterday in a speech to the Sheriff's Association, took some questions from some sheriffs talking about the prisons, talking about data centers, and there's some other ones we'll get to over time. Hey, Jeff, Craig here. I have a good authority. The prison cell walls were built with sheetrock and drop-down ceilings. Let RSA build them. Well, they're built to drop down ceilings of sheetrock. That's not going to end well, is it? Tim, Jeff, she's still got a lot of pull. That's why you saw a little returning champion cool it. I remember back in the day when my wife was working on her PhD in Alabama, she was an intern for the director of the Alabama Commission of Higher Education. And she worked with Miss Ivy at that time. She was over governmental affairs at ACHA. That was a different KIV. Very different. KIV used to have way more of a presence, especially among Republicans. It's kind of sad to see how that's deteriorated. Yeah, the memo got sent out, and it was sort of like, do you want this bridge or not? But you got to do it our way. And you're just going to have to handle whatever pushback you get from your constituents. Do you want the bridge? Or do you want to wait another 20 years? Do you want to sit in traffic? I mean, I reject this notion that, especially at the federal level, our policymakers are numb to this. That they're not trying, but so much has to happen at the LDOT level. The permitting, the contractors, and they're set on this. They were set on the Taj Mahal bridges. So, Mike, Alta Point has been on propaganda tour now that Meemaw took down the VA for them. I'm sure they're paying good money for their segments, but it's I'm a taxpayer money for mental health monopoly they've achieved. I've been hearing about Alta Point. I don't know. They're easy to scapegoat, but like kind of talk about Cadell Construction, Alta Point, and these they're the pseudo big mules. They're not quite Alabama Power or whatever, BCA. But they're just doing what is in their mandate. But they're being allowed to do it by this administration. If you were in charge of Alta Point, Mike, how would you handle your state affairs? David, if you build it West Alabama Corridor, they will come, Dollar General. I don't even know you're going to get that. There's just no people there. No one wants to live there. It doesn't have the amenities that you could have in a lot of different places. And that's the issue. If you build it, we're going to get some kind of manufacturing facility and they're going to create this economic utopia in Marengo County. It's just not the case. They don't have the labor. It's not that they can't teach them the skills. You don't have the labor. You don't have the people who are willing to come to work every day. As Senator Brubaker said, you know, the catfish farms are struggling to employ people. They had a hard time finding workers for this road project. That was one of their struggles, and they had to pay a premium for that. That's the other dirty little secret. I was trying to make that point to Senator Brubaker. The cost of this project is so expensive because of the way they were trying to do it. They had to pay, like I said, a premium on the labor and a premium to get it done in an expeditious fashion to beat the clock before Governor Ivey is out of office. Nate Tesher said that dude needs to stay out the caffeine. Senator Brubaker. The Reddit radicals were whining about the president's connection to the new bridge project, definitely claiming they will never drive on it. That from Scrollverine. Well, that's too bad. Where are they going to go? They probably don't drive very far anyway. They spend all day on Reddit. Do prisoners really need beds? Well, I'm going to say this about the prisons. We have to do something about prisons. And you want to be this, you know, I had one texter that just got on my nerves. I think he shows up every now and then. Well, I follow the Constitution to the letter. Nothing is more important to me than the Constitution. If that's the case, and I assume that's the way some of you are, the Eighth Amendment is part of the Bill of Rights. And in the Eighth Amendment, it's a prohibition on cruel and unusual punishment. Well, who gets to decide what cruel and unusual is? It's the federal government, the federal court specifically. That's the way the system works. So you don't need to build resort prisons. I'm not saying that, but you got to meet a certain standard. And the state's just not doing that. And I've long said that. If you, you know, conservatives or Republicans have never been like really keen on prison construction. Well, they did the crime. They got to do the time, let them suffer the consequences and whatever conditions we have. And generally that's fair. But you got to meet a certain standard to pass muster with the Eighth Amendment. And if you can't do that, if you can't meet that standard, the federal government has shown in the past in other states and in Alabama that it will come in and it will fix it for you. And then after it does it, it will send you the bill. Therein lies the problem. It's up to the state to maintain a satisfactory Department of Corrections, and they're not doing it. It's a corrupt entity from the bottom up. I'm talking about prison guards. I'm talking about the conditions. I'm talking about the construction. I'm talking about the contractors. Jason, so we're spending more to build a prison than it costs to build Cowboy Stadium in Arlington. Unbelievable. That's I don't know if you adjust it for inflation, but the prison, the idea here is this is the age-old problem in Alabama corrections. They have a real problem hiring prison guards. You know, the state, no one wants to work there. They're having a hard time. We're talking about building this four-lane road, thinking it'll spur some kind of economic development. But the prisons are kind of a symbol of that as well, that it's just not people there to work there. The people, you know, if you had your choice, you get paid as much or something slightly comparable to working at a prison versus working at the catfish farm or working in the at the sawmill or working in, you know, as a logger or whatever. What are you going to do? You're not going to go subject yourself to the threat of physical violence every day working at a prison. So they can't staff them. So the idea here is, well, let's build new prisons where we don't have to staff them. We'll rely on technology. The technology being cameras. You can't install the camera system in the old prisons. This is what we're told. You can't put in all the new ways of tracking inmates like we have in the past in these prisons that were built in the early 1980s. They weren't the you know, you had to come in, you had to install. I mean, the electricians would know, those of you listening to the program, how hard that could be. Imagine trying to wire up a prison for the technology we have now to monitor these inmates. You're better off just starting all over. That's the theory there. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Tried to tell me to stay away from the train line. She said that all the railroad men just drink up your blood like wine.
Hey, I was country.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us. On this Tuesday morning, Silicon Will Hampson, that's in the next segment, so stick around for that. Programming note tomorrow, got Joey Clark, a couple other guests to be named later, probably Bradley J and one other one for tomorrow's program, so please tune in tomorrow. 251-343-0106. Just a few texts, 1, 2, 3, 4 to get to. A name texter, me and Senator Brubaker think exactly alike on prison matter. I've been preaching this to death, but no one wants to hear it. The bid process was dirty to high F, and there was no bid process. They'd said, this is the company we have to use because we had to build this fast. We don't have time is of the essence, and then it turned out it wasn't. A lot of speculation about what went on there, and I don't know if anything will ever come of it, but it's not good government. Ultra Runner, your questions and follow-ups for the interview with Elliot at the end of last show last Friday were excellent. Do we have anyone fighting for South Alabama on the toll issue? Anyone? Well, we talk about the absentee governor, and we talk about, especially Senator Elliott, has talked about how she's let us down. That there's a lot of reasons not to trust this governor. Why wouldn't we wait till we have a new out-of-office director and a new governor? And what we're told is, well, you better do it now or you'll lose the federal money. Is that true? I don't know. Seems like you could have your two U.S. senators and your senior congressional delegation say, hey, we're going to give them an extension. In reality, the toll is probably a part of this that's unavoidable. And just let the lame duck governor take the fall for it and do it as artfully as you can and as PR'd up as you can, and then what happens will happen. Most people don't pay attention to what's going on in state government. They probably won't know there'll be a $7.70 toll until the bridge opens and the toll booth opens and they pay the $7.70. That's just the reality. I'm sorry. It was different 2019, but it's clear the marching orders are sent out to try to mitigate the pitchforks and torches and the backlash that would jeopardize the project. Wait till after the elections. Wait till after the primaries. Wait till that's all settled. Don't let this be a hot button issue for any election. And that's the PR strategy. Buy off who you can. Hey, Al Dot would like to advertise on your program or whatever. And people, the media will back off. And then come up with some talking points to give to lawmakers that are deemed appropriate to respond to any questions from hostile people like Jeff Poore or Dale Jackson or whoever. Sean Sullivan. It's textbook 101. I hate to sound defeated, but it feels that way sometimes. I'm not like out here trying to tell you there's some kind of evil conspiracy going on. But that's just the way the system is. There's not some kind of corrupt conspiracy. There's just some harsh realities. Probably some bad judgment in the way money was spent in the past. And some ill-advised proposals that they thought that they could coerce the public into going along with. But as it turns out, weren't really viable. We'll say this is viable. I think it's very risky, $7.70 toll, if people get wind of it. They didn't want that in the headline. They wanted the headline to be all about the Algo Pass or the commuter pass. They didn't want the base toll of $7.70 to be part of a headline. And that's how the game is played. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Cowboys. they still aren't seen. Sadly in search of one step in my heart, themselves and their slow moving.
Text line 251-343-0106. We get to our guest, Will Hampson, here in just a moment. I want to read this text. This is from an unnamed texter. I'm tired of hearing about the $7.70 per trip. A trip is a round trip, in my opinion. A round trip is $15.40, plus whatever additional fees tack on the invoice, which is likely to be another $3 to $5 based on my experience on Florida tolls. Even with Algo, it's $6 trip round trip fare. So to my retired mother who drives every Tuesday to have lunch with her friends, glad over another $6 to her trip cost. At some point, the toll takes its toll. It affects her behavior and willingness to drive across the bay. Fair point. We're just saying $70 each way, but the truth is it's double. Or if you go and you get the Algo Pass, it's still $6 per round trip. So there you have it. Joining us now on the line, Will Hampson from P2 Public Affairs, our Tuesday regular. Will, good morning. How are you?
Jeff, doing great. Glad to be with you as always.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. So what I wanted to get you on about, a state you know well, South Carolina. I don't think your former boss, Nancy Mace, is going to be a U.S. senator anytime soon, but what do you think is going to happen there? We see the appointment of Lindsey Graham's sister, but they're going to have this sort of hurry-up primary, and you know, I don't have a good read on what to expect there.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing here, right, was were they going to appoint someone who would then run for the seat and kind of give that person a leg up, or were they going to give it to a kind of placeholder? And obviously we now know the answer to that with Lindsey Graham's sister fulfilling the rest of his term. They kind of decided that the governor, the president got together and effectively said, you know, we'll kind of leave the field open here. A name I'm hearing a lot of is Russell Fry. He's a congressman from the Myrtle Beach area, very conservative, very close with the president and his team. It sounds like there's some encouragement from the president's team for Russell Fry to jump in. The interesting thing, you kind of had this primary play out statewide in the governor's race, right? And so, you know, I think people are looking at Pam Avett, the current lieutenant governor. She came in second place. She lost in the runoff. And so the question is now, you've obviously got the attorney general, Alan Wilson, is going to be the next governor. Does that kind of leave her in line, or does her getting stomped by him kind of change those dynamics? So I think it'll be really interesting to see who kind of jumps into this race. I think you'll see a number of individuals that were in the governor's race try and give it a shot. And why not, right? I mean, you've got a couple members of Congress, and including my former boss, Nancy Mace. I agree with your assessment, Jeff. I don't think she's a real contender here. But if you're about to be out of a job, why not give it a shot? So I think much like the governor's primary, it will end up being a pretty crowded field here.
What kind of, the tenor of that office, we want to compare South Carolina to Alabama, but they're not, they don't elect the same kind of politicians. Not since the last century, at least, was Strom Thurmond, at one point in our history, but is this like an establishment play? Is there ever going to be another like Lindsey Graham, neoconservative type, hawkish type? What do you think? What's the appetite there now that you have a blank slate? And do you get someone in the vein of a Tommy Tuberville or Barry Moore, or do you think that they go in the other direction?
Well, look, Jeff, I mean, look at kind of the firebrands that ran for governor, right? I mean, you had a Nancy Mace, you had a Ralph Norman, a Freedom Caucus, Barry Moore type congressman who did not do well. The establishment types, the lieutenant governor who had been endorsed by the sitting governor, and the attorney general, whose father, of course, Joe Wilson, a longtime congressman in his own right. So you had the more establishment types ended up being successful in this primary, right? I mean, I don't think anyone would claim that Ralph Norman was not the most conservative individual to run in that governor's race. It didn't mean that he got the steam that he needed to be successful. So I think South Carolina, obviously a very interesting state, you know, and it is kind of similar in the vein of an Alabama, right, where you've got some of these bigger institutional groups that still have a lot of sway. They are able to spend a lot of money, usually on behalf of more establishment type candidates. And so you see, obviously you have to be conservative, but the most conservative options do not always end up being the ones that win.
So you have like a big mule establishment in South Carolina. I mean, she's probably like this in a lot of states. And I suppose what the last like kind of right-wingy statewide elected official at a high office, like I look at Jim DeMint or somebody, those days may be done in South Carolina.
Well, Jeff, I think it's the same dynamics as it is across the country, right? The more establishment candidates often have the resources to win. And the conservative candidates, there's not always a mechanism for them to match. And so you see the conservative candidates, you know, go down the list. Again, I mean, you have a Ralph Norman in South Carolina. You have a Mo Brooks in Alabama. You look at these guys, and generally they end up being outspent 6 or 7 to 1 for that reason. The more establishment candidate gets the resources. There are mechanisms. There are groups that end up funding them. And the money on the conservative side is not usually there. So it's not unusual for these more conservative types to be significantly outspent. And as we've seen, being more conservative is not always better than having the money to convince people you're more conservative. If you could pick being the conservative or having a lot of money, I think we all know where we would rather be in those races.
Let's do this. So you look at DeSantis and his ascendancy, and remember he had Adam Putnam, who was kind of the establishment guy. He was ad commissioner in Florida, very powerful office in Florida. But you have what I find it these one party states where you don't have like a truly defined Democratic Party and a truly defined Republican Party, where Republicans voted Republican primary and the Democrats voted Democrat primary. And you don't get to true ideological stripes where you have a uniparty, right? And I think it's what we have in Alabama. And there's a dilution. And, you know, it's all good and fine that we're dominated by a Republican supermajority of Republican offices from top to bottom. But, like, that does come at a cost. And I think that's kind of true in a lot of these states.
And look, Jeff, the simplest way that we know what you're saying is completely spot on is look at the pushback when we suggest changing that, right? And obviously here in the state, we had, you know, Speaker Ledbetter come out and effectively say, you know, some of my incumbents would lose if we closed primaries. I mean, he was pretty on the nose about it. But absolutely, I mean, if you change the electorate, if you make the electorate more conservative, you will inevitably see more conservatives elected. This is not an Alabama problem. It's a problem nationwide. And you look at some of these states, 100%, Jeff, if you change who is able to vote, particularly in Republican primaries, and you make that electorate more conservative, there will be an impact, I think, in the quality of conservative candidates that are able to win. But until that happens, well, you've got everyone able to kind of vote for, you know, whoever they feel like in that primary, it opens up a lot of different opportunities for lesser conservative candidates to win.
Yeah. And so you get this dilution, and that's the way they want the system. They want that moderation, but the moderation, in some ways, I don't know, there's real virtue in it or a benefit to the state, but it does benefit somebody, and it's just it's kind of an establishment play to really prop up, like, this dilution of the party system.
But I also think, Jeff, and this is true in a lot of states, but the uber-ultra-conservative voter is usually a pretty well-informed voter. You have a lot of people out there where, frankly, they don't know if the Business Council of Alabama is getting involved in a race. Does that mean that they're, you know, is that the conservative candidate? Is that the more moderate candidate? A lot of people don't know. They don't follow this. They're not as honed in as we are. They're not as honed in as the average talk radio listener is. That kind of chaos often suits the individuals with more money. They want a less informed, greater electorate that may not know what's going on, that may not be looking into it as closely as some others are. And so you look at the dynamics, there is a reason why the system is set up the way that it is. And there's a reason why whenever there are discussions of changing it, there is such great pushback because it works. And if you are able to get the majority of the resources, whether you are more conservative or not, you are, generally speaking, better equipped to win a Republican primary.
Well, it just takes like a star personality like Tommy Tuberville or someone to really break through that. Now, who knows what he's going to be like as governor? There's certainly a reason for optimism, but I don't think he's going to be, the second coming of Ronald Reagan or something like that. Let's not fool ourselves here. He's still going to have friends and, in certain circles. So, that's the system. And we don't realize in the state how much is determined at this primary process. You don't see all of the signs and all the campaign ads and all the hoopla in the general election. You see it in these primaries where you have a very limited number of voters, and they're the ones who decide the outcome of the state.
And Jeff, we have to remember, Tommy Tuberville, in my opinion, is a little bit of an abnormality. Now, obviously, he got a lot of that institutional support, right? He had the Club for Growth support. He had the Alabama Farmers Federation support. Tommy Tuberville has never been outspent in a race he's been on the ballot for, aside from Doug Jones. And that obviously did not make a major difference here. Now, the one thing that the state of Alabama had going for them is that they had two really good, strong conservatives running against each other in that 2020 Senate primary. And the outcome was either going to be Tommy Tuberville, who was a very good, strong conservative, or Jeff Sessions, who was a very good, strong conservative. There really was no lane for a more moderate candidate to win that primary. So obviously those dynamics are a little bit unique there. In that there was going to be a conservative either way. Usually the dynamics are not like that. Usually you have a more moderate candidate who comes in and is able to kind of coalesce all of those resources. But, that's what you kind of look at and you wonder why do we not have more races like that, right? Like, why do we, generally speaking, not have two really strong conservative options running against each other in a runoff? And again, I think it goes to show you, conservatives are, generally speaking, at a resource disadvantage. And I think nationally, it's not just a problem in Alabama. It's not just a problem in the South. Conservatives need to start to figure this out, Jeff. If they want to win races, if they want to be more of a force in our Republican politics, they need to figure out a way to be able to match the resources that these more moderate establishment candidates have time and time again. And up to this point, obviously we had kind of the 2010 Tea Party wave. That's an abnormality. It's really tough for conservatives to get over the hump. And I think we still, to our frustration, we haven't figured that out.
Well, I'll say this, and kind of looking at this, I'm not impressed with the consulting class. I think they're beatable. I think that over the years they've gotten some W's and they've kind of gotten fat and happy, but there's the opportunity there. And maybe one example could be like a John Wall or somebody. The establishment had their guy and he got beat. That you can do this, that these guys aren't unbeatable though. That you're right. The conservatives just need a little more know-how, a little more organization, and they could get over the hump. And they could beat these guys, these establishment guys who, like I said, they want to like George Soros or just do something that's like a hot button for conservatives to trigger them. That stuff doesn't work. I mean, people see through that, but that's what it's going to take. It's going to take some kind of, I know it's like defies the idea of sort of the bureaucracy or whatever and the collective, but they got to organize some way and at least amass a little bit of momentum that way. And there's not really anything, there's not an institution you can look to advise these conservatives across the board nationally.
And even some of our success stories, Jeff, I mean, John Wall's a perfect example, right? If John Wall does not have a close personal relationship with Susie Wiles' daughter, does he get the Trump endorsement? And without the Trump endorsement, does he win? Is that even kind of a fluky thing there where, I mean, a personal relationship through his work as LGOP chair effectively got him the lieutenant governor's seat. But without that, who knows where we're standing? We could very well be sitting here with Wes Allen about to be lieutenant governor. I mean, even that is not necessarily the success story that we make it out to be. Conservatives have a very major hurdle. And obviously, we can look and point to some successes in a John Wall or a Tommy Tuberville. But the fact of the matter is, Jeff, overwhelmingly, it does take a little bit of that, you know, kind of magic and luck where all things have to line up and end up perfectly for us to see these conservative candidates win. And I think that Republicans obviously need to figure out how they can do a better job so that it doesn't take all of the stars aligning for us to be able to elect conservatives.
Will, folks want to find you online. How can they do so?
The Will Hampson on X.
Will, we appreciate it. We'll do it again next week.
Jeff, thanks as always.
All right, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. And you gave me nothing in return. You know it ain't so hard to say. Would you please just go? To the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday. What's left of this Tuesday morning? Joy Clark coming up on the program tomorrow. Probably Bradley Jay and another guest to be named later. Ultra Runner, I expect Ivy and many legislators to screw South Alabama over. But when our local representatives acquiesce, I am disheartened he can no longer be called the returning champion. Unnamed texture, I don't understand. It's to build a toll bridge. Why will the tunnel still be open and free? No. We'll be open, but I believe it'll be tolled until they will eventually take out the toll, the tunnel. At some point, the tunnel will go away. I don't know when that day will come. Mike, can you make Trump's plan to toll the Strait of Hormuz make sense? It's going to help fuel prices. Toll it like tariffs aren't going to be absorbed by businesses. They're going to be a tax on consumer. Maybe it's to add protection to it. I don't know. I don't know the economics, Mike. Be dark, Jeff. The state owns cattle, ranches, pig farms, hay fields. The prisoners work and make a killing off of work release. Nobody hears about that. Scrovering regarding the bridge. Last week you asked your guest said he rarely crosses the Mobile. What? You mean the hockey, new civic center, the new airport, a couple of rooftop restaurants and pride banners, and a bigger cruise ship will lure you to Mobile every week? And then finally, Ben, why spend all the money on prisons when you could kill people with an 18-wheeler and only get time served? So there you have it. Coming up here shortly, Midday Mobile. Sean, take it away.
Well, we should figure out what the shipping industry did because the toll, you know, the Iranians had their toll for the Strait. And then we said, okay, well, we'll provide security. We'll do a toll. And now President Trump has scrapped that. He says no. So obviously, maybe the ships had the no toll sticker on there or something like that. They figured out, you know, I don't think it was 770 through the Strait, 770 back. I think it was like 20%. But they, President has now said no. He's not gonna do the tolling.
What if you did like a Blackwater sort of for a Blackwater type private Navy where. Mm-hmm. You just escorted these ships through these danger zones and on the high seas.
Well, I've got a friend who kind of does that already, right? They do it mostly based on the pirates in that region, but yeah, it's that company based right here in Mobile.
That's going to make everything more expensive. But
so their deal is they're in business, and I mean, Jonathan probably could say it on there, but they're in business because the insurance companies, right? The insurance companies won't insure the cargo unless in certain situations they have security on there. And so that's how it's really the push from the insurance companies that gives them the motives to charge these ships to be on there.
I mean, it's awful, and the U.S. Navy for you know, since World War II has been the policeman of the high seas, but for commerce to exist on the high seas, something's got to be done.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, y'all, coming up in just a minute, joining me is Ask the Sheriff, Mobile County Sheriff Paul Birch. Of course, we'll remember the now late Sam Cochran in our conversation next hour, and love to hear from you as well.
All right, I got to get out of here. We'll try to do better tomorrow. Sorry, Phyllis, I forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.